trying to keep reasonably cool here at the Next Hope. Got a lot of exciting talks throughout the day, throughout the night. If you haven't checked out the schedule, make sure you become aware that it's not just the talks up here on the 18th floor, but also we have a bunch of activity going on the mezzanine level, including some scheduled stuff, some lockpicking contests. We have a bunch of things going on in the hackerspace village, a lot of learning, a lot of do-it-yourself. We have content going on in what we call the video temple area. These are all on your map of the program. In addition, late night tonight, we have some concerts, some audio and video extravaganza style concerts starting up down on the mezzanine level. Of course, the content in these rooms goes all the way through midnight and beyond. So be sure to stick around, stay energized. If you need additional energy, you got the Club Mate down on the mezzanine level to keep you going. I'd like to announce that the fourth track signups are now open, and as people sign up, we'll try to make sure we announce those. This is called the More Room. It's opposite the men's bathroom up the hallway. So just sign up on the sign-up sheets, your name, the talk title, anything else you might want to add. Check those sheets frequently if there's a talk that you might want to attend. There's going to be some good ones that are not in the program. That's the More Room. Also, amd.hope.net is a website for the latest on the badges, those flashy, blinky lights you're wearing around your neck. These are programmable. They're active. They're very cool. There's a lot of software surrounding them. amd.hope.net. Up next, we have someone who was with us in the last Hope and luckily survived to tell the tale and catch the YouTube video of the whole coffin scene. With the procession and all that from the last time we were in this room. And we're very happy to have Johannes back again to talk all about sex.
Ooh. Hey, good afternoon, and right after Kaminsky. Very good. So I'm glad I'm here again. In fact, I will be here twice, which makes it very exciting and worth the flyover from Europe. And today, I want to talk to you about smut. So, first of all, welcome to Hope. And my name is Johannes, and I'm part of Monochrome. Yo! And we are from Austria. That's how Austria looks like. It's a little bit wrong, but still, it works. Austrians are known for music and mass murder, so expect the best. And that's our official press photo. I like the image tag in it. That's not nerdcore. I don't know, whatever it is. Okay, so just to give you a brief intro, what Monochrome does, that gives you a little bit of a perspective why we do talk about sex and technology today. Monochrome started in 1993 as a kind of like a fanzine project. Because we are European leftists, we didn't like the Mondo 2000 like liberal hippie kind of thing. So we started our own thing. In the meantime, it's 500 pages. If it drops on your foot, it breaks your toe. We just released a new issue a couple of months ago. We have a couple of them here. You can buy them. So we started as a fanzine, actually, in the FidoNet. Oh, yeah. We do T-shirts. I was a copyright infringement in a previous life. Or slacking is killing the DIY industry. We do musicals about banking software. Communist sock puppet shows where we talk about neoliberalism and stuff like that. Kiki and Boo Boo. We are doing a series of adventure games called Soviet Unterzögersdorf about the last existing Soviet Republic. You can download it for free. It's for Linux and Windows and that Apple thing. We do a regular, like daily, pretty much like a webcomic kind of thing. We call it Monochrome's Raw Image Format. And we have stuff like, good afternoon, are you interested in attacking ships on fire off the shoulder of Orion? Or dinosaurs, they squish us and use us as lube. So if you want to check it out, every day a new cartoon or kind of thing we are doing. We created a massive multiplayer thumb wrestling with a couple of different network topologies and token ring networks and stuff like that. We have a top, like our record is like 1,200 people playing it at the same time. It was pretty okay. I'm not sure if you can see it, but we do something like flash mobs just for sculptures, because public art is so bad, you can do it in under 5 minutes on your Walmart parking space. So go out there, set up your own thing. This one is called New Kids on the Roadblock. We did blood sausage made out of our own blood. It was pretty tasty. And we do Robo Exotica together with a couple of other guys. And Robo Exotica is the festival for cocktail robotics. You might have heard about that one. We create and present machines that mix cocktails, serve cocktails, and drink cocktails. And for example, this one, it's the slowest and loudest mojito machine in the known universe. It's kind of steampunk, like Cory Doctorow would jerk off. So, why am I here? I'm here because Monochrome is doing a regular conference. We are doing it now the fourth time in San Francisco in autumn, and it's called Oz Electronica. I'm not sure if you pronounce it Oz or Ars or whatever your language is. So it's Oz Electronica, and it's about the future of screw it yourself. If you Twitter, please use the correct Twitter terms, you know, strict tweeting. Use monochrome hope, anal hope, or press F1 for help. And carry Goatsy in your heart. Because the human to testicle ratio has always been nearly 1-1. Ars Electronica started in 2007. We had the idea a couple of years before that, but we couldn't find a venue to host it because nobody wanted to host a sex and tech conference. So finally we thought about why not doing it in San Francisco? I mean, you're wanking all the time there, so there's Silicon Valley is around the corner. Let's do it there. And actually that was a good team up. So we started in 2007 and the topic was pronovation. We started the movement in a dungeon of kink.com. You might know kink.com. They're doing BDSM porn and stuff like that. And they used to have like the so-called porn palace. It was a BDSM dungeon where they shot most of their nasty little videos. And it was the first time an academic conference was held there. So it was pretty okay. Some people were, it was pretty good, a pretty good crowd of people attended to see the talks and the demonstrations. And some people couldn't believe their eyes. I checked out this nice anal probe. It was comfortable. And, you know, why is the Holy Bible there? I tell you why. Because the first Ars Electronica was dealing with pronovation. That means the history of pornography, sex, and technological innovation. And that's very, very important. Because none of the shit you use nowadays would be there without pornography or smut. The first things that were printed by Gutenberg after he printed the Bible was erotica, okay? And he financed printing more Bibles with erotica. So the Holy Bible, and I mean there's a spoiler, Jesus dies on page 681, okay? The Holy Bible, yeah? Is closely related to sex technology. There's stuff like the Polaroid camera. The first Polaroid camera was called the Swinger. And you can imagine why it was called the Swinger in the 60s. Because they were targeting the amateur porn market. Because nobody actually, especially in the States, you know, 60s, nice. Nobody wanted to take like porn pictures or naked pictures of his wife or something. And then bring it to Walmart and please develop it for me. So there was a certain target audience for that. But before that, I mean, in the late 19th century, when photography became really, really important, there's a case of a guy, like a doctor from London, and in a single house raid, they raided thousands and thousands of pornographic images from his basement because it was illegal back then. And it was just like 5 years after the first introduction of the photographic camera to the public audience. So it's really pretty much right there. One of the first films ever shot was kind of like a porno kind of thing. But we go on. I mean, in the 1970s, 1980s, when the tape market grew bigger and bigger and bigger. I mean, one of the reasons why the VHS tape became so important as the dominant form of videotaping, not the far superior Video 2000 format that was pretty much way, way, way better than VHS. One reason was the porn market, because they tried, well, now I like license agreements and blah, 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 and it costs money. Let's choose VHS. We have many, 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 many things. Like, my dad bought a VHS recorder and player because he wanted to see porn. That's it, yeah? But you have to consider many, many people bought video cameras too. And there's this nice little home video magazine from the 1980s, early 1980s, X-rated aesthetics. Video's most libidinous tapes by whoever Gary Giddens is. If he's here, please raise your hand. So pornography, sexuality, technology, and do-it-yourself were interconnected all the time. I mean, stuff like that, see you, see me, broadband internet, all that shit would not be there. There wouldn't be like a tone dial phone system if like all the sex telephone operators, like sex telephone call systems, blah, 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 in the 1980s, they couldn't handle all the callers. So they needed far superior systems. And that's why tone dial kind of was introduced. The same with broadband, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the first Ars Electronica was dealing with the history of sex, porn, and technology and how it's driving innovation. But it's not ending, of course. There is stuff like sex machines. We see one here. But also, you may consider that if you think that pornography is stimulating technological innovation, of course, we live in a patriarchal society, and of course, it's a heterosexist point of view, because mainly in the 70s, 60s, 80s, of course, the main consumers were men. They were actually longing for having cheap access to pornography, so they bought all the stuff. But in the meantime, there's actually an interesting thing happening, because nowadays, we see that more and more women actually are also getting into this whole thing. And it's interesting to see that the sex, the fucking machines market, many, many more women are interested in, for example, building something like a sex machine or fucking machine than just like 10 years ago. So there's something interesting happening. Why am I showing a guy, a good friend of mine, pumping fake sperm into a cocktail glass? We did it at the first Ars Electronica because we wanted a unit of technological innovation, a unit of pornographic technological innovation, and it's 72. Why is it 72? We took a random DVD store in San Francisco, and we counted all the DVDs there. And then we kind of calculated, how many DVDs, how many cum shots, how many liters of sperm are in a DVD store, and it's 72. 72 liters of sperm in a standard DVD store. And I'm talking about DVDs here. I mean, could you imagine how much sperm is in the internet? We would all drown! It would be the perfect apocalypse, like drowning in sperm, yeah? So, good. People like Mark Derry, who is a great cultural philosopher, spoke at the first Ars Electronica. So I'm not talking about only like bullshit going on about fake sperm and stuff like that. We had a couple of really interesting speakers there. He was actually talking about sex, technology, and war, and how that was interconnected. We had people like this sleazy guy, Rich Gibson, who was talking about GPS and sex. And we had Foxilla. Foxilla looks like who? Johnny Five! And Foxilla was built by the same guy who built Johnny Five. The guy is now building sex machines and probably makes a living from that. That's pretty okay, I guess. Yeah. We had it on stage, and I had a bet with a friend, $20. Not even in San Francisco, someone is going on stage and having sex with a machine, and I lost. Someone got up on stage and had a couple of female ejaculations on stage. There, in front of... Sorry, I'm burping. That's actually fitting. Like, if I talk about female ejaculation, I burp all the time. Sorry. So, it was very interesting. after that, having many, many talks about like third wave feminism and stuff like that, because it's quite interesting. I mentioned before, more and more women are actually into sex machines. Some women I know, and there's an interesting study out there, says that some women would rather have sex with a sex machine than with a man. Which is quite interesting, because from a feminist point of view and third wave feminism, it's almost like an interesting choice to make. So, I mean, in the meantime, I'm not like, I don't have to choose a guy. Come on, they're sweaty and smelly, and why not doing some other things? And some hackerspaces out there actually have interesting small DIY workshops of building your own sex machines. It's pretty easy. The stuff is so steampunk, it's just like, it's very easy. But then again, there is lots of technology in there that could be like helping to find new ways to do that. So, pronovation was the first theme of Ars Electronica. And in fact, if you're interested, you can buy it on Amazon or wherever else, stupid capitalist companies. There is a reader, an essay reader, an anthology about all the talks given at the first Ars Electronica about pronovation. I have one copy here with me. The second Ars Electronica was Do Androids Sleep with Electric Sheep? Because talking about the past and talking about sex machines and a possible future, it was almost clear to talk about sex and science fiction and technology and what ideas are in science fiction that are interesting for sex tech future. In the year 1972, it was the first science fiction reader ever presented, Eros in Orbit, by Joseph Elder, a collection of short stories about sex, science fiction short stories that specifically feature sex or pornography or erotica. Very interesting. But I mean, you're all nerds, most of you are male. What do we have out there? I mean, there's stuff like UFO from the early 1970s. There's like Gary Anderson UFO series. I mean, that's quite heterosexist to see. I mean, why would someone like work in a moon base like this? I don't know. Except like selling copies of the TV show, but I don't know. But let's go on. I mean, there's stuff like Battlestar Galactica, and Battlestar Galactica, the new one, not the old one. The old one is pretty much like Mormon indoctrination. You know that? The guy who created the first Battlestar Galactica created it because he wanted to have a science fiction storyline along Mormon doctrine. So it's pretty much like it's based on Mormon ideology, the first one, not the latter one. The latter one is pretty much like about screwing robots all the time, yeah? Screwing robots and ripping guys' eyes out. That's what it's all about. It's quite interesting to see and how they deal with this whole philosophical dilemma of like, we are fake, we are not fake, we are human, we are not human. What do we do? How do we love? How do we have sex? It's quite interesting to see. But there are things like, you know, well, Blade Runner. I mean, some of the younger nerds might not even know Blade Runner nowadays. But there are actually conventions of like people dressing up and feeling hot about being a replicant. Or, I mean, see what you can do with him. It's a small ASCII porn based on the ASCII Star Wars version. I'm not telling you more, Google for yourself, okay? In the year 1992, we had one of the first virtual sex scene on screen, a really bad, dumbass film called The Lawnmower Man. I mean, the whole film is so bad. I mean, you can see Tron nowadays and it looks cool, but this one, it's so bad. It's like a 3-pixel, whatever. But interestingly, it was the first time the public got introduced to this idea of like, there is like cyber sex and what could it be? Alien porn. Ooh, why not? There is render porn out there. And so many people who do not have access to shoot their own porn or have so crazy ideas about sexuality that they want to create their own vision of sexuality. And I mean, somebody's out there who really has this like crazy idea of like an alien should rape a woman. Why not? I mean, he did it. Yeah, it's out there. I cannot unsee it. And, well, Render porn is pretty much an interesting liberation for people who have crazy ideas to just, like, bombard us with them. Why not? You know the game? Spore, yes. Spore is the biggest platform for penis creatures in the universe, okay? All the people who played Spore, I mean, I'm not sure if anyone plays Spore right now, but it's so like, what was it, like 2008 or something like that. I don't know. But all the people went into Spore and said, oh, I can make creatures with it. Interesting, great, perfect. I'll make one with a giant penis. Oh, I'm so bored, I go away. And there's this, like, there's so many, like lonely penis creatures in Spore. Oh, my. Go pick them up. I don't know. Do something with them. But it tells a lot about what people want to do. I mean, I'm not saying, yeah. Okay. To make it simple, mankind is a tool-using species and a sexual species, and we cannot go beyond that. Even though if some of you might, I've never had sex in my life, I should forget about the whole thing. No, you will never. So, Data is kissing the Borg Queen. Kind of lame, but it's getting better. Oh, whoa. Terminator. Why not? I mean, we're talking about techno-hedonism here. So Ars Electronica is about techno-hedonism and about how we can use technology to have a good time. I mean, why shouldn't, like, robots have a good time? And there's a whole interesting essay in the book for Ars Electronica number 2 about sex and science fiction, about the interesting relationship between, I mean, what is artificial intelligence? I mean, we will not know if something is really artificially intelligent, because most of the time, intelligent beings don't let you tell them what they should do. So if a machine would be really intelligent, it would stop working. But maybe it would start fucking, who knows? So there's an interesting aspect, and there are actually philosophers dealing with the interesting idea of, like, reproduction of machines and how they would do that, and how you could enforce machines to reproduce, because, of course, machines might like it. So maybe we could build in interesting subroutines that gives a profit to the machine to reproduce or whatever. I mean, we're talking about a completely Darwinist thing here. There are so many other ways why people would enjoy sex. But still, I mean, it's out there and people are doing research about it. Oh no. Nah, it's just too bad. Ah! That's what happened in Roswell. No. I skipped that one. That's a nice one. I had a good time with my friend, the stormtrooper. Yeah, there's nothing sexual in this image. Strange. Oh! No, I actually like it. It turns me on. The basic question is, what is the future of pornography and sexuality? I talked about the whole idea of sex machines and what they could do. But there's also a whole dimension of virtual sex possibilities, and, of course, virtual effects. A good friend of mine, Aaron Musalski, was talking about the strange idea of pornography and updating pornography. Let's see. That's render porn, most definitely, but that's also kind of like Nazi render porn, whatever it is. Oh, lots of gay men fighting against Persians. Interesting, yeah? Why am I showing you that? Because, you see, I mean, there's a slight difference between the two images. There's lots of effects are, like, projected onto the image. And, I mean, there's that guy, and you know the film? You know the film if I show you the next one? You see? It's like, of course, visual enhancement, and suddenly the guy looks a little bit younger because they used it for one of the X-Men films. They needed a younger guy. They needed a younger Stewart. So the same here. I mean, that looks pretty okay. And if we talk about the future of porn and of render porn, they will merge. There is no doubt. There will be porn in the future that's realistic, that's photorealistic, and you can't even tell a difference if it's a real actor or not a real actor. It's just a couple of years, I'll tell you. I mean, stuff like that happens all the time. And I mean, I don't want to, I mean, don't think about Gollum and sex or eating fish, but it's just an image, yeah? People can do stuff like that. I mean, most of porn is highly routine. It's just like, you know, there are like five different ways to do porn and ejaculation. That's it. It's boring, yeah? I think the future of porn, because it will be way easier to produce it digitally, will be way more interesting, because it will be easier to produce it. There will be more sidetracks of porn. Not only the boring, heterosexist, mainstream porn, there will be so many side porns. It will be really interesting. I mean, it's 100% pixels. And I mean, look at the tentacles. I mean, some actor? Some tentacles. Ooh, whatever. Lolita. Why am I showing you Lolita? The actress, I don't know her name. Do you know her name? I don't know. It was like the remake of Lolita. And the problem was, and that's an interesting dimension of porn and moral values. She was under 18, so she couldn't be filmed naked. But it's a really important part of Lolita, you know, like being naked and having sex with an older guy and stuff. Yeah, Nabokov knew what he was writing about. So how could they deal with like this really talented young actress, but they couldn't show her breasts? What they did is like they pretty much like copy-pasted breasts of a female who was over 18 onto her. And that's an interesting, whoa, oh my God. I mean, okay, she can't show breasts, but we can show all the breasts on her. Interesting. Let's do that. And if you like, I mean, I'm just, it's a moral dilemma, I know. But the whole discussion about child porn, I mean, is it still child porn if it shows a child and it's completely naturalistic, but there is no child in it because it's completely rendered? So we have a strange future of like different areas of child pornography and possible like illegal stuff out there. I'm just warning you what might happen. I mean, typical film budgets, you see, and you see what a pornographic... That's the fact. I mean, there are a couple of porn movies out there who were really, really expensive, like the Pirates one, which is, by the way, really funny at the same time. Producing porn will be way cheaper in the future, and that will kick off things you will not be able to imagine, including me. So, do androids sleep with electric sheep? Only when we're desperate, that's right. And I see some desperate faces here. Ars Electronica, the second one, including a couple of really interesting short stories. So it's not only a reader with like essays, but there's also a couple of really good science fiction short stories in this one. So Rudy Rucker, Cory Doctorow, you know, the steampunk guy, and a couple of other people. You see Karen Harris, Kit O'Donnell, Tom Roche, Violet Blue. I'm not sure how you think about the whole Violet Blue thing, but whatever, she's in there. Good. I'm introducing you to a concept now that might be interesting for you. Because every time at Ars Electronica, we started in 2008, we introduced the concept of the pre-Ars Electronica. So we want to introduce the general audience to interesting sex tech related concepts. Fucking machines, orgasmotrons, whatever. And this one here, the guy's name is Zenny. He is a French guy living in Japan. And he created a machine, a software program that's connected to a dildo, a vibrator actually, and it only vibrates in two cases, like it's two different machines. The first machine only vibrates if there is a pretty decent seismic activity somewhere on the planet. So if there's an earthquake, the dildo starts. He calls it a series of controversial dildos because he's connecting sex and death. So if people die somewhere in Haiti, and it kind of makes a strange click in your head, if you think about that. The second one is actually vibrating if there is civilian body count in Iraq. So if the U.S. military kills people in Iraq, and it was sitting there on the table and buzzing and buzzing and buzzing, and it made me sick, and it was good. We also have machines. They're kind of like this one. I wouldn't try it. It's kind of hard. But some people are into it. There's this like giant, one part of this like sex machine is like giant speakers. And it's actually pumping sound onto you. So it's not only like the classic sex machine kind of thing. If you're sitting there as a woman, it's also like there's also a male version. But it's pumping sound onto you. It's almost like infrasound. It's very, very crazy. But some people like it. There are actually people out there, and there was a study that some people only can orgasm if there's a certain frequency in the air, so a certain bass or something like that. So some of you out there who might have a problem with that, specifically, I guess, no, I'm not talking about that. Try to sit next to your speaker and play around with it or use an equalizer or something. I don't know. Good. That's David Fine, a good friend of mine. He's also a sex robot. He's from the 25th century, and he came back to meet us. In 2009, we talked about intercourse and intracourse. The basic idea was sexuality, genetics, biotech, wetware, body modifications, and especially talking about that and the gender problem. The gender problem is most of porn, most of sex tech is targeted to men. That doesn't mean that sex machines are targeted to men because they wouldn't use them, because most of them are way too afraid using them. But they are targeting like the market of that some men want to see women have sex with a machine. And so there's like, again, this like pretty heterosexist porn market, like jumping on the whole thing and not liberating it, but just like selling it to the same guys with the same heteronormative ideas. But we wanted to talk about that and the future. And is there a future not only about sex machines, but modifying your own body? So, I mean, so many people probably in here have piercings and, you know, split tongues and whatever. Would there be a future, or should there be a future of probably having like two penises or two clits or whatever, I don't know. There are many, many people out there thinking about body modification and genetic engineering and sex. Because if you like it, why not, if you have the money? Some people, like this like crazy Cirque du Soleil guy, he flew into space for a couple of million dollars to the ISS. Some other crazy millionaire would say, like, well, come on, I need a second dick now. Yeah. It's not possible right now, but there is always the future. And the problem is, the future is like the Jetsons plus rape. And it should not happen. I like that better, without the rape. But you all know 4chan. I mean, I think the optimum future for 4chan would be that, okay? But I think we can change that. I think there is a possibility to just like go beyond this like strange like patriarchal thing that we have going on right here. And it's a little bit, of course, here because more hackers are male and female. Think about it. If you start a hackerspace, try to bring in more female people. Yeah? Bring them in, really. I mean that, because we don't want to have like sausage parties, okay? Bring them in, because hackerspaces and the hacker movement is about teaching. It's about learning. And you can learn so much if you just like do not block off 50% of the planet's population, okay? Just learn more. This thing, for example, would not have happened if there wouldn't be a very open culture in the hackerspace Noise Bridge in San Francisco. Because one of the female members, Annie Niao, she built a steampunk vibrator, this one here. It's actually working with steam. You pump steam into it and it vibrates. Look at that. It's really good. It's a really good piece of machinery. Yeah? You usually put something like on it because the main problem of using hot steam in a metal thing is like Ladies, be careful. It cauterizes you from within, okay? So she's mainly using it with compressed air. That works too. But still, it's an interesting concept of using steam to run a vibrator. She won the Prix Ars Electronica last year for this machine. Another winner of the Prix Ars Electronica was this thing here. I mean, you can see a lot, but it's a guy who was really interested in non-human sex. So he was interested in plant sex. So what he did is he did lots of research about how plants react to light and sound and stuff. So I'm not sure if it really works. We can talk to plants. But he projected certain light patterns onto plants, and he called it plant porn. Okay? So we thought that's quite interesting. Someone is thinking of plants. Let's have a plant porn win one of the Prix Ars Electronicas. Another award went to Jason Scott, who is somewhere in the back there. And Jason Scott won the award because we felt it highly appropriate, because he's investing so much time collecting smut from the early days of the internet and FidoNet and BBS systems. He has such a huge collection of ASCII porn and, you know, like Apple II porn, whatever. He's probably the biggest source on the planet for like pre-VGA porn. So we said, hey, Jason Scott should get an award for his work, like this one. Oh, I like the axe. Or I don't even know. I think that's teletype porn. Teletype porn, not bad. This machine here is a machine. Can you imagine what it's doing? It's, of course, I'm dealing with that stuff all the time, so it's nothing new for me. But no, you can play Atari 2600, especially this crazy tank game, while having sex. So you put it up your butt, you put it up your vagina, and then you play. Okay? Or you can imagine, yeah? It was pretty easy to build that thing. It was like the idea was really great, and we had a demonstration on stage. It worked pretty well. So, I mean, you out there, you definitely can do something like that. So think about it and send us an email. We might be able to give you A, an award, or B, present it at Ars Electronica in San Francisco in autumn. It will be the 30th of September is the first day, and then 1st, 2nd, and 3rd of October. So if you want to show up, it will be there. That guy won the last award. It's a lifetime award. The first lifetime award in 2008 went to Kyle Michulis, because Kyle Michulis is one of the big researchers about DIY sex. Go to his website. It's called /dong, /dong.org. And he's researching about sex toys who are online, and most of them actually suck, okay? And so he takes them apart and does interesting things with them and makes them better. So go to /dong.org and you'll see that he has a couple of really interesting ideas of like buying cheap sex technology for a couple of bucks and making something really awesome with them. I like how you use awesome all the time. I think I should just like say awesome, 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 awesome! Okay, that was Kyle Michulis, the first winner in 2008. In 2009, this guy, Uncle Abdul, won the Prix Ars Electronica Lifetime Award, because he is one of the main guys behind electrostimulation. He came, he's an electrician. He is interested in currents. The problem with research about electricity is there's lots of research about how electricity kills you and how it can kill you. But there's less and there's almost no research, and he did all of it, about how sexuality and electricity are interacting. So how can we put, I don't know, a current through your body or your penis or your clit or whatever for like 12 hours without not harming you or killing you? That's the basic idea. There's a huge, let's look at that. I mean, you see, there are lots of things going on here. And he did all the basic research about that. Most of it, he tried it on himself. So what's happening? Like 6 hours of like this volt. Bzzz. Let's turn it on. Bzzz. And there's a whole scene about electrostimulation. But still, I think you should try it. because I was kind of afraid of the whole thing. He was there. He had a couple of things there, like a portable Tesla coil kind of thing. And if you rub it on your nipple, it's really cool. It was kind of afraid of like, but still, yeah. His name is Uncle Abdul. And Uncle Abdul Electrostim, just Google it and you'll find his website. He wrote like the one and only book about electrostimulation and what you should do and what you should don't, what you shouldn't do, like putting like a high currency through your heart and stuff. But it's really, really interesting. And he came up with the whole idea of electrostimulation because he read about this experiment from France in the 1700, whatever, yeah, where a guy asked a couple of people, you know, like very bourgeois and upper class and some counts and countesses and stuff, and he asked them to just hold hands, and then he was like putting a current through them, and they all jumped like frogs. And that was the first time ever electrostimulation was used as like a pleasure device or like a fun, oh, nice, ah, it was a nice and interesting tickling sensation and blah, blah, blah. And he read this story and then he came up, hey, I'm an electrician. Well, why not? Let's play with that. And he has done many, many good things in his life. So, good. I think most of the stuff I wanted to tell you, I told it to you already. Screw it yourself. The future is now or next Monday. And my name is Johannes Grenzfurtner of Monochrome. That's my Twitter account and my email address. Send me an email. And I think we still have plenty of time for questions and Q&A and whatever. So if you are interested, just like ask me whatever you want to. And don't be shy. I mean, what stays in pen? No. Okay. I'm not sure how long I thank you. Okay. Just like 43 minutes. There's lots of time to talk or for you to have sex in the bathroom. Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. I'm not sure if how should we do the thing with the microphone or just repeat the question or whatever. Okay, good. What story? Okay, ah, yeah, Lolita, okay, yeah. I mean, how was that decision made? I think they just didn't want to get into a lawsuit. I mean, it's a mainstream film. I think they just like, I mean. Okay, you got an idea? Maybe. I think there was some like serious problem solving going on in one of the meetings in whatever film company they did it there. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, the good thing is there is for most of that stuff there is no like real clear legislation for doing that. I mean, maybe someone might come up with the idea like, okay, if like 80% of the body of the actress plus the tits, that doesn't work. So. I don't know. There might be some interesting thing going on in the future about stuff like that. Let's see that. I can see that legislation is a little bit slow on the whole process at the moment. Okay, I can't see them. So, I mean, it would be better if someone down there would just tell me. Who. Let's take you first, okay? In the future, is there a sexier sex robot? A sexier sex robot. I mean, what I could tell you is, like, if you want a really sexy robot, build it yourself. So I think the future will be, there is a market for that, and there is like a multi-million dollar market for stuff like that. It might not be too big right now, but I can remind you that there's so many people doing their own sex machines. There's a really interesting book by Timothy Archibald from the Bay Area, and he took pictures of people in rural countryside America everywhere and their self-built sex machines. So, and you can really like see, it's like somewhere in Wisconsin, there are cows around and there's this like strange like fucking machine sitting like in front of this like suburban like garage. and some guy built it for his wife, okay? There's so many people out there. He did research and drove all over America to meet those guys. So it's not only like that some crazy companies like kink.com built machines or led machines being built for them to use them in porn. There are many people out there who do it. And even some very Catholic ones. There's one story of a guy who built a sex machine for his wife, and then they got divorced. And then he wanted to sell the machine. And you could only buy the machine if you were married, because he didn't want to just sell the machine to someone who would just like use it on a girlfriend. No. Sex machine only if you're married, okay? Stuff like that. I mean, there's so many... that's what I meant with, like, we are a tool-using species and a sexual species. Because even though many people think they are conservative, there's a basic sex drive in us, and some stuff just turns us on and we can't even control it. I mean, that's fetishism, you know. And sometimes, you know, there are crazy, interesting stories of, like, even, like, the most crazy, like, teabagging people building sex machines. I mean, what? Yeah. Okay.
Hey, I was looking into teledildonics and that kind of thing, looking at Slash Dong about a year ago, and one of the first things I noticed about it, and I was in a long-distance relationship back then, but the problem was it seemed like the whole community is kind of, it's all kind of masturbatory. But it seems like there's more of a concentration on self-pleasure. Like, it's more about jerking yourself off with a computer than jerking someone else off with a computer. It doesn't seem like there's as much to help with, like, relationships, that sort of thing. Do you think there's the balance is off?
To a certain extent. I mean, I'm quoting an interesting French guy named Lacan, yeah? Lacan is a French philosopher, and he pretty much tells us that there's always the other, and the other is always a projection of ourself. So even though you think you're just like jerking off with someone else, I mean, at least you're jerking off with someone else. And there's no way to tell what's real sex and what's not real sex. I mean, it's just like a common cultural idea of what sex should be. But that might change in the future. That's what I'm talking about when I'm talking about like changing gender and stuff like that. This like basic idea of like, yeah, there are two like predominantly male female guys in bed and doing like five or six different like kind of sex positions or stuff like that. Of course, that's valid and it's been done for a long, 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 long time. But the introduction of technology into sexuality changed humanity, and it will change humanity in the future. So even though at the moment it might be a little bit boring, it might change because technology might become better, or B, maybe that's the way, maybe that's a new era of sexual like interactions that might not be comparable with what we had before. I don't know. Yeah, and please tell me when I should shut up. I don't know.
I have a question about sort of hybridization of humans and machines. Mm-hmm. So there's work, I don't know if you're familiar with Stellark.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy Australian, yeah.
Yeah, great guy. What are your thoughts on that in actually incorporating the technology into our bodies as opposed to just outside machines?
That was pretty much like the topic of last year's Ars Electronica, like of intercourse and intracourse. I mean, if you're not familiar to Stellark, he's a crazy artist, technologist, and he's done stuff like actually swallowing pieces of art that would then be in his stomach as part of him. So he's like putting art into himself and stuff like that. Of course, I mean, he has this like general vision of whatever, like, he thinks that humans should not think of, like, just going to space. They should live in space. And they should not live in, like, in a tin can like the ISS. They should be in space. Like, their body should be modified to be able to tolerate, like, I don't know, like, 2 Kelvin or whatever, yeah? So he's pretty crazy about the whole stuff. But I have to remind you that the whole cyborg movement started in the early 1960s because this crazy guy kind of said, hey, we need new concepts for spacesuits. And he came up with the general idea of the cyborg. So the idea of the cyborg was created because someone was thinking about spacesuits. And I mean, if you can think of it, there is porn of it. I'm not sure if there is spacesuit porn, but I can tell you, a couple of years ago, actually 10 years ago, there was the first ejaculation in zero gravity. It was shot for a porn film in one of these like diving airplanes, for a film called the Uranus Experiment. I mean, a porn production company invested money in hiring like one of these like parabolic airplanes to shoot a cum shot. Okay, check it out. It's probably on Pirate Bay. Uranus Experiment. Okay, yeah. So the hybridization, I think it will happen. I don't know how it will happen, but I mean, for the start, two penises are okay, I guess, yeah.
So you talk about sex being a driver for a lot of technological innovation. Mm-hmm. Are you concerned that this only drives certain parts of technological innovation and that ultimately it will become self-serving and basically be the end of human civilization?
Yeah, I think the main problem is that the main problem of human civilization at the moment is, I mean, we are all longing for like an apocalypse. Just like every time, it's always bad. Like all the bad apocalypse movies pop up, like Logan's Run and stuff. I mean, it's not bad, but there are certain areas when popular culture actually reflects what people think about their society. In the 70s, lots of like doomsday films, and now the doomsday films like re-emerge. Because, you know, it's such a bad time and stuff. The problem is that the real apocalypse is that the apocalypse will never happen. That's the problem. We are stuck in this, like, ongoing, it might get better. No, it's just, like, going worse. It might get better. No, it's just going worse. That's the problem of human civilization at the moment, yeah? So I think that if we talk, like, from a moralistic point of view about sex and technology, we can't, it's like a... It's pure speculation, of course. I mean, you can think it's probably a bad thing that Gutenberg printed erotica on his printing press, but I'm not sure if that was a good or bad decision. We cannot like just like make a decision of, okay, well, he should not have done that. They should not have marketed the swinger. They should not have like invested in broadband internet because it was just for like wankers at home who don't want to go to a DVD or VHS store to get their porn. I don't know. I think it's hard to judge all of that stuff. It's way more interesting, I think, to look into details, to take one certain aspect, like Blu-ray. Why is Blu-ray there and not the HD kind of thing, yeah? Or what was actually the opposite thing of Blu-ray? What did Blu-ray kick out? HD DVD, that was it, okay. And Blu-ray just made it because the Japanese porn market was highly interested in Blu-ray DVD, okay? So, again, we have this like VHS kind of thing, but I highly urge you to go online and check the backstory of Blu-ray and why they decided to do it and blah, blah, blah. That's an interesting way to deal with the problem. The problem is not, we cannot talk about, will the human species go down the drains?
Nah. I'm not talking really more. Perspective, okay. I'm talking about like space exploration. You mentioned space exploration. I mean, if there's sex machines everywhere and everyone can wank whenever they want, then there's no reason to do anything or to like leave the planet before you die.
2 minutes. Yeah. I mean, I like to wank and have sex, and I'm still doing things. Good. One recommendation about that. There's an excellent Scottish writer called Ian Banks. You've heard of Ian Banks? Ian Banks, or sometimes Ian M. Banks. And he wrote his first science fiction novel in 1987 called Consider Fleabus. And he created a really interesting universe called The Culture. The Culture is pretty much like a socialist anarchist utopia. And you think, hey, that's boring. I mean, socialist utopia, anarchist, everyone can do whatever they like, they can change their sexes, they can change their genders, they can do whatever they like, everything is possible, body modifications, blah, yeah? That's boring. And I tell you, it's not boring. Read all the culture novels, The Culture Cycle by Ian Banks, about this interesting utopia that still has problems, but it could give you a sense of what I'm talking about, how we might be able to change society in the future. And I'm not, of course, it's science fiction. Of course, it's to a certain extent not plausible, but it gives you an interesting point of view about what could happen, and maybe we should do that. Thanks a lot. I have to stop now. If you have questions, I'm down here somewhere, and I'll have a second talk tomorrow at 7 p.m. over there somewhere, and I'm talking about failing and how we should all fail, and that failing is the only driving force we have. So thank you. I hope I failed tonight. Not tonight, in the afternoon. I failed. It's the afternoon. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye. One second, I'm just like shutting down here.
Yeah, and then good thing to do is to have chats with people, just walk right out to the back.